Representative Thomas Massie recently proposed legislation that would require candidates to, quote, disclose both their possession of dual citizenship and also the foreign country in which their dual citizenship is held. The disclosure of dual citizenship status would appear publicly in the statement of candidacy filed when political candidates seek election to federal office. This bill would amend the Federal Election Campaign Act. When Representative Massie's Dual Loyalty Disclosure Act, H.R. 2356, was first introduced, it had three original co-sponsors, Representatives Andy Biggs, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Clay Higgins. Although the bill only requires disclosure, Representative Massie believes the law should go further and require candidates to renounce their dual citizenship entirely. You may be asking yourself right now, what is dual citizenship? Who allows it? What's the advantage of having it? And does the United States suffer from allowing dual citizenship? Let's answer the first one. Dual citizenship simply means an individual is a national of two countries at the same time. Someone who is a dual citizen has equal rights with the citizens of both countries. This means they will pay taxes and get social benefits in the country they reside. A lot of countries will have a treaty with each other to prevent double taxation of that individual. They can also choose which country to serve in the military. Countries must have reciprocity for this to work. There has to be an agreement on the rights and obligations of the citizens they share. Dual citizenship can be obtained in a variety of ways, depending on the country offering it. These options include birth, naturalization, marriage, by descent, or by investment. Now, don't confuse dual citizens with dual passports or second citizenship. Someone can have a passport from another country and be considered a second citizen, but it doesn't mean they have equal rights in each country. In fact, each country will consider them a citizen, meaning they may have to pay taxes and satisfy military obligations in both countries. Dual passports can be obtained as well through marriage, investment, or naturalization. So who allows dual citizenship? Well, nearly half of all the countries around the globe permit dual citizenship. Countries such as Italy, the UK, France, Spain, Russia, Israel, Sweden, and Denmark allow for dual citizenship with the U.S. Again, the prerequisites and ease of obtaining dual citizenship will vary by country. Places like Bulgaria, Croatia, Cambodia, Liechtenstein, and South Korea require you to be a descendant of that country to even become a dual citizen. Then there's places like Austria, which can be very strict. Their process is complex. The individual must reside in that country for 10 years before even applying, and they must renounce any other citizenship before it can be granted. Places that strictly prohibit dual citizenship include places such as Afghanistan, China, North Korea, Iran, Japan, and India. So what are the benefits of being a dual citizen? Well, you get visa-free travel, access to high-quality health care whenever you want it, access to the best education around the globe, more opportunities for business development, a wider array of employment opportunities, and of course, tax optimization. If H.R. 2356 were to pass, America wouldn't be alone. As mentioned before, many countries strictly prohibit dual citizenship. In regards to the current political climate and migration trends, many countries are rethinking their dual citizenship process altogether. Places like Germany are considering withdrawing dual citizenship over concerns of anti-Semitism abroad, and Italy has cut down on dual citizenship via descendants by no longer offering it to great-grandchildren. So merely asking candidates to disclose that they are a dual citizen isn't that harsh. It's also not unprecedented. So is this practice of dual citizenship constitutional? Well, that's going to depend on who you ask. Some side with Representative Thomas Massie and think that congressmen shouldn't be allowed to be dual citizens at all, as split loyalty means you're not serving your constituents. Critics will say the U.S. Constitution does not specifically address dual citizenship or loyalty. They contend that the Founding Fathers believed the Constitution was a declaration of loyalty and allegiance. Therefore, they believe this dual citizenship concept is implicit in the Constitution. So let's go down the rabbit hole and discover how this conundrum of dual citizenship was created. During the Napoleonic Wars, British sailors would stop American ships and force them into the royal service. Their reason was that King George never consented to their American naturalization. Thus, they were actually still British. This helped trigger the War of 1812. After the war, though, citizenship issues faded. Britain and the United States came to a head again during the Civil War. A small group of naturalized Americans joined the Fenian movement to fight for Irish independence. They were captured by the British and put through British trials. This created a tiff between Americans and British once more. This caused the United States to pass the Expatriation Act of 1868. It declared that, quote, the right of expatriation is a natural and inherent right of all people, indispensable to the enjoyment of the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Congress elaborated further, stating that any action by a U.S. officer, quote, which denies, restricts, impairs, or questions the right of expatriation is hereby declared inconsistent with the fundamental principles of this government. The law also required the president to take action whenever any citizen was, quote, unjustly deprived of his liberty by a foreign sovereign. Years later, the State Department began invoking provisions of the Bancroft Treaties. They systematically revoked citizenship to Americans who went back to live for extended periods of time in their home country. They regarded naturalization in another country as triggering the automatic loss of U.S. citizenship, despite the individual's wishes. Anyone who took an oath to a foreign government lost their citizenship as well. In 1907, Congress passed a law codifying most of these administrative rules. Revoking someone's citizenship depended on the act, like naturalizing in another country or staying in a foreign country for a long time. It was not up to the individual. Congress also added a caveat to citizenship. Any American woman who married a foreign husband would automatically lose their U.S. citizenship. This sexist restriction was intended to prevent dual citizenship of the woman and the children that she might have. Let's go a little bit further on down the road. 6 years after President Theodore Roosevelt left office, he gave a famous speech regarding citizenship, nationality, and the melting pot that America was becoming. He despised what he called hyphenated Americans. He believed in immigration, but only in immigrants that were, quote, heartily and singly loyal to this republic. He said that the, quote, foreign-born population of this country must be an Americanized population. No other kind can fight the battles of America, either in war or peace. He also demanded that immigrants receive fair and equal treatment, saying, quote, we cannot secure such loyalty unless we make this a country where men shall feel that they have justice. We cannot afford to continue to use immigrants merely as industrial assets while they remain social outcasts. Now, after women secured the right to vote, the provision that would revoke a woman's citizenship when she married a foreign husband was repealed. Since women could now transmit citizenship to their children, there were significantly more opportunities for dual citizens. The year was 1940, and the loophole of dual citizenship had to be addressed. World War II ushered in concerns of Americans with German, Italian, and Japanese ancestry. Politicians feared that these individuals held loyalty to their ancestral homelands and that they would choose that country over the U.S. This fear caused the United States to put Japanese individuals in internment camps. The United States also didn't want Jewish refugees from Nazi Germany to settle here. To address these issues, Congress passed the Nationality Act. This prohibited Americans from pledging allegiance or taking an oath of loyalty to a foreign country. It stated, quote, that any American citizen shall be deemed to have expatriated himself when he has taken an oath of allegiance to any foreign state. To prevent a massive group of Germans, Italians, and Japanese from going back to their homeland to fight, they were put under surveillance, put in internment camps, and prevented from returning to their homeland, as it mandated that, quote, no American citizen shall be allowed to expatriate himself when his country is at war. Now, since then, the Supreme Court has went round and round on the issue of dual citizenship. In 1958, the Supreme Court ruled three times in the same day regarding this matter. In Tropp v. Dallas, the court ruled that revoking citizenship from a military deserter was cruel and unusual punishment and thereby unconstitutional. That same day, the court ruled in Nishikawa v. Dallas. They reversed the expatriation of a dual national who had fought with the Japanese in World War II, believing that he deserved a hearing to prove his foreign military service was not coerced. Again on that same day, the court decided Perez v. Brownell. Perez was born in the U.S., but lived in and voted in Mexico, his parents' home country. The court ruled against Perez, finding that, quote, a native-born U.S. citizen who leaves the country to avoid the draft and participate in local elections is not entitled to U.S. citizenship upon return. This issue, however, was far from settled. In 1967, we have the case of Afroyim versus Rusk. The court decided that only an American citizen can let go of his own citizenship. The government cannot just cancel someone's citizenship because they feel like it. Why? Well, doing so would violate the Fifth Amendment, as well as contradict the 14th Amendment. which describes who is considered a United States citizen. It's simple, all persons born or naturalized. Then again, in 1979, we have another case called Vance v. Terrazas. Here, the court decided that having another citizenship doesn't imply you're giving up your U.S. citizenship. So here we are, nearly 250 years old, and still arguing over immigration, citizenship, and what it means to be an American. The Constitution doesn't specifically address it. Laws have loosened over the years, and they've constricted over the years. Right now, we're standing on legal precedent that dictates one citizenship cannot be revoked. If the U.S. can't take away your citizenship without your consent, the chances are they can't force you to revoke it to run for office or hold office. Perhaps this is why Massey kept his bill to just disclosure, to prevent the potential legal brouhaha that might erupt over it. But ask yourself this. Do you think you're entitled to know all the allegiances that your representative has? Are you entitled to know if they're a dual citizen? If you're like Massey, and like me, the answer is a resounding yes. Maybe I can't take away your citizenship, but I sure should have the right to decide whether I want you representing me. Let me know what you think in the comments below. Now that you know where we've been, find out where we're going. Tune in to Ladies Love Politics, where you can stay informed without going insane.